When a woman makes a neder, a vow prohibiting her to benefit from a particular thing, the Torah writes that on the day that her husband hears about the vow, he has the ability to do haforas nedarim, which is when he says that he doesn't want his wife to be bound by that neder, and if he does so, then he cancels the neder, and she would be permitted to benefit from that item which she made a neder against. However, not every vow which she makes can he annul. Only if that vow is something which causes her pain, or it's considered very hard to keep to that vow, this is known as inui nefesh, or if the vow is something which affects their relationship, this is known as devarim shebeino leveino. If it's something which affects their relationship, then he can also annul that vow. Now, our Mishnah talks about a case where hamadris ishto shleitelet levei saviha, one who makes a neder against his wife that she cannot go to her father's house. Now, as we have explained in the past couple of Mishnayos, it is impossible for me to make a neder that you cannot benefit from something which does not belong to me. So it cannot be literal that the husband made a neder that his wife can't go to her father's house. Rather, we're talking about a situation where she made the neder. But if she made the neder, then why would he be responsible at all? We're going to see in the Mishnah that he would need to divorce her as a result of this neder, because he's responsible. So it must be that after she made the neder, he, the husband, said that he agrees with the neder and that he is not annulling it. But if so, then it's difficult to understand, because this neder is not something which is devarim shebeino leveino. It's not something which is to do with their relationship with each other. And it's not something which is painful for her. It might be a little bit hard, but it does not come under the category of pain, something which really afflicts herself. If so, then the husband doesn't have the ability to annul the vow. So he's not considered responsible at all that she is bound by this vow. So the Gemara explains that we are discussing a case where she actually makes a neder against having relations with her husband. And she says that the relations which we'll have together are forbidden for me if I will go to my father's house. So now the neder itself is going on not having relations, which is considered to be devarim shebeino leveino, something which is to do with their relationship with the husband and wife, and therefore he does have the power to annul that vow. So if he doesn't annul it, he's considered to be responsible, and it shows a certain level of hatred towards his wife, that he is happy for her to be bound by such a neder. So the Mishnah says, "Bizman shu'im al-ba'ir," in a time, in a scenario, where her father lives in the same city as she does, so that means she would be used to visiting him quite often. In that case, if her vow was chodesh echad, for just 1 month, she said, "I'm prohibiting the benefit of relations with you if I go to my father's house in the next month," so that's considered very bearable, and so Yekayim, he can remain married to her. However, Shnayim, if it was for 2 months or any longer than 1 month, then Yotzivit and Kesubah, he would be obligated to divorce her and to give her her Kesubah, since he is restricting his wife. It was Nanshub Iracheres, and in a time where her father lives in a different city, in such a case, she would usually only visit him on Yom Tov. So Regal Echad Yekayim, if the vow was only until the next Yom Tov, it did not include a second Yom Tov, so then he can remain married to her. However, if it's any longer than that, then you would be obligated to divorce her. Now the next part of the Mishnah is talking about the wife of a Kohen, and we're going according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, which we saw a couple of Mishnahs ago, who holds that we give a longer time for the wife of a Kohen, since once he divorces her, he may not remarry her. And therefore when it comes to a wife of a Kohen, only if it's Shalosha, only if the vow includes 3 Yom Tovim, not just 2, then Yetzivet and Kesubah, he would be obligated to divorce her and give her her Kesubah. Mishnah Hey, Amadis Ishto Shleitech Levei Tzaevel, one who makes a neder against his wife that she may not go to a mourner's house to comfort a particular mourner, or to a house of feasting, such as a wedding celebration. And again, we're talking about a situation where she prohibited having relations with him if she does go to one of these places, and he said that he is not annulling the vow. In such a case, he is considered to have been restricting his wife, and therefore Yetzivet and Kesubah, he would be obligated to divorce her and give her her Kesubah, because he is locking in front of her. This is sort of a metaphor of locking a door. He's restricting her and causing it that in the future other people won't come to her to comfort her or to share in her joy. So this is considered to be very restrictive towards his wife, and therefore he would be obligated to divorce her immediately. However, if he claims that the reason why he did not annul the vow is because of something else, which the Gemara explains, that he was concerned that in such places, such as a house of mourning or a house of celebration, like weddings, he was concerned that there is inappropriateness. He didn't want his wife to be present in such forums. In such a case, he's not doing it in order to restrict his wife. And it doesn't show hatred from his part. In fact, quite the opposite, and therefore Rashai, he has permission to do so, and he would not be obligated to divorce her. Now what happens if she makes a particular vow, for example, the one we just mentioned, or other examples which we have seen throughout the Perek, and he says, I am annulling the vow. Or my lawyer says to her, I am annulling your vow, so you will not be bound by this vow, but it's only al menashe tomi leploini, on condition that you say to so-and-so, masha omart li, that which you told me, o masha omarti loch, or that which I told you, and we're talking about things which they spoke about very privately whilst they were having relations. And it would be extremely embarrassing for her to tell that to somebody else, and she finds that she's not able to do so. She can't bring herself to do that, so effectively, he has not annulled the vow. Because he's saying, I'm annulling it on condition that you do something which is pretty much impossible. Or if he says, on condition that you fill up water and pour it into the rubbish. Pour it into the garbage, so he wants her to look like an absolute fool, and to shame herself, so effectively speaking, since he knows she's not going to do that, he is not annulling the vow, but saying that he's happy for her to be bound by that vow. Unless he does something else which is very shameful for her, so either way, that is a reason to obligate him to divorce his wife. Mishnah Vav, up until this point, the Perek has been discussing cases where one is obligated to divorce his wife, and to give her her ksuba, since he is partly responsible for the divorce, and he's showing sort of hatred towards her, and restricting her, so he is responsible, and so he would need to give her her ksuba upon divorcing her. On the other hand, ve'elu yotzes sheloi b'ksuba, the following women are divorced, and they do not receive their ksuba. Because in these cases, he is obligated to divorce her, or according to some, it's not an obligation, but nevertheless, if he does divorce her, she would not receive her ksuba, because she has violated certain averus. Now, many do understand that it is an obligation, and we're referring to a woman, ha'averus al das Moshe, who transgresses what is known as das Moshe, the law of Moshe, which the Mishnah will bring examples to show that this refers to when she causes her husband to violate prohibitions mid-a-raisa. That is known as Das Moshe, and V'Yehudis, if she transgresses Das Yehudis, which refers to certain customs and certain behaviors which Jewish women accepted upon themselves in order to maintain a modest behavior, and once they accepted upon themselves these things, so that then became halacha and absolutely necessary. So if she goes against any of these, then he would be obligated to divorce her, and she would not receive her kasuba. There is a das Moshe, what is considered to be the law of Moshe, what are examples? Ma'achilatu she'enu ma'usar, if she feeds him food from which the maisers have not been separated. The maisis refers to the various gifts and tithes which must be separated from one's produce before eating it. So if she prepares food for him, and she tells him that it's all tithed, and it's all permitted to eat, and then he finds out, based on two witnesses, that really it is not tithed. So based on the testimony of two witnesses, he now has proof that she lied, and she caused him to violate a prohibition mid-a-raisa of eating untithed produce. Another example, Shamshatu Nida, if she has relations with him whilst she is a Nida, when she is Tomei, and she is forbidden to have relations with him. Or if she doesn't separate challah when baking dough, that is one of the tithes which are necessary to separate, and it's forbidden mid-a-raisa to eat dough, to eat bread from which the challah has not been separated. So all of these things are prohibitions mid-a-raisa, which she is causing her husband to violate, so that is a reason for her to lose her ksuba upon being divorced. Or if she makes an adorim, she vows and does not keep to her vows. The Gemara says that the punishment for doing so is that one's children die. Now her children are also his children. So that is also a reason to divorce her, and that she should lose her ksuba since it is her fault. Alright, Vezi Das Yehudis, what is considered to be Das Yehudis, the various modest ways of behaving. Yotzev Rosha Parua, if she goes out into the street with her hair uncovered, and the Gemara explains that if her hair is totally uncovered once she is married, then this is not considered Das Yehudis, this is forbidden mid-a-raisa. We're talking about a woman who does cover her hair in public, but it's not covered totally, or it's not covered in the modest way in which women accepted upon themselves to behave. So in that case, although she might be fulfilling the requirement mid-a-raisa of covering her hair in public, she nevertheless shows a lack of modesty by not doing it in the regular way in which women cover their hair. The Tova Bashuk, or if she spins wool in the marketplace, this is an activity which requires quite a lot of bodily movement with her arms, etc., so it's considered to be inappropriate, and a lack of modesty. Umedabresim kol adam. If she talks with all men, if she chats with other men, that is also considered to be inappropriate, and a lack of modesty such that her husband would, according to some, be obligated to divorce her. According to others, he wouldn't be obligated, but either way, she would lose her rights to her kasuba. And really, this makes quite a lot of sense. We learned at the beginning of the Masechta, we mentioned that one of the reasons why the Chachamim instituted the kasuba was in order that a man be discouraged from divorcing his wife, because you'd have to pay her a large sum of money. But such a woman who is violating these prohibitions, quite the opposite is true. We're happy for him to divorce her. So that is one of the reasons why she would lose her rights to the kasuba. Abba Shol says, Afham kaleles yodo v'fonov, even one who curses her husband's parents in front of him, that is also considered to be a sort of outrageous behavior which would cause her to lose her right to the kasuba. Rabbi Tarfin says, Af ha-kailonis, even a kailonis, who is a woman who speaks very loudly about private things. Is a kailonis, what is considered to be an example of a kailonis? If she is talking inside of her house, and her neighbors who are sitting next door in the other house can hear her voice, that's how loudly she is speaking, and she is talking of very private things. For example, she is demanding her husband to have relations with her, which is a very private thing, but she is speaking very loudly about it, which causes shame towards her husband. And again, it is a lack of modesty, which would cause her to lose her rights to the kasuba. Mishnah Zayin, another example of a woman who would not receive her kasuba upon being divorced. One who performs kiddushin on a woman on condition that she is not bound by any vows. He doesn't want to marry a woman and then find out once he's married her that she's forbidden to eat any meat for the rest of her life. So he performs kiddushin and he says that the kiddushin should only be valid if you are not bound by any vows which would restrict you to a large degree. If it's a small vow, so he doesn't really mind, but if it's a vow which really limits her, then he is particular about this, and so he makes that condition. The halacha is that v'imnitzu alein adorim, if he goes and marries her and he finds that she is bound by vows, eino mekudeshes, the kiddushin are invalid. She's not considered to be an arusa, a woman who has received kiddushin, since the whole kiddushin was on condition, and that condition was not fulfilled, and therefore the kiddushin are invalid. She wouldn't even require a divorce, and certainly she would not receive her kasuba. Now what happens if that was at the time of the kiddushin, and when it came to the nisuin, that's the last stage of the marriage, with the process of the chuppah, and then she goes and lives with him, kenosa stam, at that point he brought her into his house and he married her without specifying any condition. So there are two ways for us to judge this. It could be that he's just not mentioning it, but he still has the mind to only marry her on condition that she is not bound by nedarim. Or we could judge that silence, that really he doesn't mind in the end, and he's no longer particular about that. So the Mishnah says, v'nitzulei nedarim, if vows are found to be upon her, once he marries her, he finds out that she is bound by vows, teitzei shelo b'chsuba, she can be divorced without receiving a k'suba. In this case, she does require a divorce and a get, in case when he was silent, he really did have the mind to marry her without any conditions attached. On the other hand, it could be that really he did keep with the conditions in his mind, in which case the kiddushin was not valid, and therefore she would not receive her kasuba, since hamitzi mechaveiro olav haraya. If somebody wants to take money from somebody else, he can only do so if it's proven that he's entitled to that money. But as long as it's a doubt as to whether the kiddushin was valid, and by extension, whether she is entitled to a kasuba, in a case of a doubt, he can keep the money because of the rule of hamitzi mechaveiro olav haraya. Alright, the Mishnah now brings a very similar case. If he performed kiddushin on her on condition that she does not have any significant injuries or wounds on her body, and it emerges that she does have wounds on her body, the kiddushin is invalid. And the truth is, even if he didn't make this condition, since it's so obvious that a man is particular about this thing, if she didn't tell him this at the time of the kiddushin, then it would also be judged as a mekach to'us, an acquisition, or in this case, kiddushin, based on misinformation. Such an acquisition is invalid. So the truth is, even if he didn't make this condition, it would also be invalid kiddushin. Alright, what happens if kenosa stam, when it comes to the time of the marriage, he does not specify the condition, and then v'nimtzu b'mumin, she is found to have wounds, teitish le'bechsuba, she would be divorced, so she would require a get, but she would not receive the kasuba. Now what is considered to be a significant wound, which would make this kiddushin a mekartos, or which would cause her to lose her rights to the kasuba, all the types of wounds and injuries which invalidate a koyein from serving in the Beit HaMikdash, And there's an entire perek in Maseches Bechoros which lists all of the different types of wounds which do invalidate a kohen. Those are considered to be significant wounds that poslim banoshim, they would invalidate the kiddushin done on a woman when a condition is that she doesn't have any wounds. Or as we explained, even without that condition, this would be considered a significant wound such that the husband is certainly particular about it, and so it would be a mekach to'us and the kiddushin would be invalid.